Hey friends, greetings and welcome to December, the Christmas kind of New Year's edition of the Uncommon Cast. And we are not in the treehouse.
We are not. We've taken a field trip today and we are actually in the Blanchards' living room. It's beautifully decorated for Christmas and it has me all in the Christmas spirit with my Christmas Starbucks drink. So I am so happy to be here today. And we have not only Ken and his sidekick Joy, but we also have Ken's friend Joe, who works with the company, who works with Ken's company. And so we've started up an interesting conversation with Joe and invited him to jump in with us if he finds anything he wants to share. So we're just excited to be here, see what God does with this next 20 minutes or so.
So over the years, we
20
have
minutes.
Had...
I don't really clear my throat in 20 minutes.
Ken, you want to clear your throat now? Let's just get it out there. Let's get that sound out there.
Get going in 20 minutes.
Over just so many years, over the last decade, I know of Don and I's and Cody's life, you and Margie have been huge mentors and shapers and influencers of us.
And encouragers and joy sparkers.
So much. And we are just so grateful for your place in our life. And honestly, when we started to think about Christmas and a new year and hearing people wanting to, I just had a conversation with a really good friend. He talked about, how do I move the needle forward in my life in this coming year? Mm-hmm. How do I have goals and vision and meet those things? When I think of wisdom and ways that we can move from where who we are to whom we want to be, I think of you and your wife, Ken. And so we wanted to have this conversation with you and to talk about, with a new year ahead and with new times, with perhaps visions of who we want to be and what we want to do in the future, what's some wisdom and advice that we could give out to people that doesn't come from just Don and I?
They get tired of hearing us,
exactly,
frankly.
Exactly, about living into a new year. And so what does that spark in your mind?
Well, Ryan, it really begins first with, what do you want to focus on next year in terms of making your life better? You know, when I worked with Norman Vincent Peale, he said, if you stop learning, lie down and let him throw the dirt on you because you're already dead. So I think that this is a time of year to say, okay, what do I want to focus on next year that might be a little different? And what I've started to think about, Ryan, is if you remember when Jesus lost his parents in the temple, mm-hmm, and they finally, you know, got him and all, and he went back home, it said that he grew in wisdom, which is intellect, he grew in stature, which is physically, grew in relationship to God spiritually, and then he grew in relationship to man, you know, which is emotionally. And so what I'm starting to say to people, look at those four areas and how well are you doing in those, you know? And so as I've looked at what I want to focus on in this next year is really the physical area. You know, I celebrated the 59th anniversary of my 21st birthday.
And wait, pause and let us figure out the math of that.
And, you know, I've had some physical issues, and so I'm going to cardiac rehab and have people like Joe coming over and taking me for walks and all. And because intellectually I'm doing pretty good because I'm constantly thinking about new projects. And my son Scott and I are starting to work on a book together, which is
awesome.
Going to really be fun. He's just taking over as the new president of our company. Our
awesome.
Past president just got an opportunity and is leaving. And spiritually, that's been an important part of my life. I try to enter my day slowly and have spiritual readings and talk to the Lord. I think that a lot of times we end up in jumping out of bed into our task-oriented self and we forget about our thoughtful, reflective self. So I'm doing pretty well on there. And emotionally, in relationships, I do pretty well there, you know, with Margie as a partner and all that. So I'm focusing on, but those of you listening, you might have, maybe you feel a little lonely. Well, maybe mm-hmm. this year ought to be thinking about goals and how to reach out to more people. Or you might really feel, you know, this is a time where maybe I ought to really think about my relationship with God or with a higher power, you know, and you want to set some goals spiritually. So I think those four things, you know, if Jesus went home to grow in those areas, they're probably pretty good areas for us to consider growing on. And and then once you get an area and you sort of say, okay, what do I want to do in that, then you have to kind of analyze, you know, what's your development level in those. So like in the whole health and fitness area, there's five areas. There's strength, you know, what are you doing to build up your muscles? There's a flexibility, you know. Diet and nutrition. There's sleep, you know, and there's, I'm forgetting the fifth one. Besides strength, it's, I don't know, it has something to do with your body. I'll think about it.
4 out of 5 is pretty good.
But, you know, so what I'm really working on is the two things it's the area of fitness, you know,
mm-hmm.
and health. And so I'm working on the fitness and the diet nutrition area in my life. So I'm making sure that I'm getting enough exercise, getting my legs stronger and building up my heart. And then one of the things we found out is that what I need to do if I want to maintain the weight loss that I got is a low salt diet. Salt is a real problem. And a lot of people just pour salt all over their.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm learning to eat better, and my wife Margie's helping me on those, and so
she's just hiding your salt.
Yeah, yeah. And but see, those are the areas I'm working on. But we developed a whole approach to, you know, a situational approach to effective leadership, which says, okay, if you got a goal, what's your development level? Which is, what is your ability already to do that particular thing, and then what is your motivation to do that? So, take sleep. That is an area I've always been very good at. I even sleep at meetings, you know. And so I'm what I would call a self-directed achiever. So I can handle a delegating leadership style there. Now, in terms of my aerobic, which is the area I really forgot, I'm kind of a disillusioned learner. You know, I've worked on exercise programs in the past, and how do I keep on, you know, going there. And so I need kind of a coaching style. I need somebody to kind of work with me and give me direction and support.
I'm right there with you on that.
And so with the whole situational, we call it SL2, there's four development levels. There's enthusiastic beginner, you know, and so I'm an enthusiastic beginner on a low-salt diet and eating well,
right.
You know, so I need a lot of close supervision and direction, you know. And then sometimes you'll get a goal that you were excited about, but it's more difficult than you thought, and you're kind of a disillusioned learner.
Yeah.
Now you need not only direction, but you need, you know, tender, loving care, you know.
A cheerleader.
Yeah, a cheerleader in that in terms of you might have a goal where you have the ability to do it, but you haven't decided you can do it all by yourself. That's what we call competent, but you know, need some help. And so you look at, where am I? Enthusiastic beginner, disillusioned learner, capable but cautious, you know, or a self-directed achiever, and there's a different leadership style. And so often what we do with New Year's resolutions is that we set them and then, you know, we announce them and everybody goes to a delegating leadership style. I say, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it, you know. And if you could handle a delegating leadership style, it wouldn't be a New Year's resolution.
<That's right. laughs> You would have been doing it already.
So you got the wrong style. So obviously you got to decide, are you an enthusiastic beginner and you need somebody to work with you closely like I am in my eating program, or are you a disillusioned learner, you know, on fitness? And so that's why I'm going to cardiac rehab, where they give me exercises and I have people walking with me, you know, and so just thinking. And strength training, I've done that over the years, and I just need support on that, you know, and make sure I got some weights upstairs that I, you know, kind of just do some basic kind of things. And so it's just important as you think of what you want to accomplish is to analyze your development level and then determine what kind of help you need. Because if it's a New Year's resolution, you need some help. Mm-hmm. Because if you could handle a delegating leadership style, you wouldn't need any help and it wouldn't be a New Year's resolution. So I don't know, I've gabbed on about that enough. So what's your thoughts, Ryan?
I hear you say a couple of things. One is narrow your focus.
Yeah.
Right. Decide kind of what area you want to work on. Don't just say, I'm going to have a whole life overhaul. Right. New year, new me. But focus on a specific area of, you know, emotional health or physical health or spiritual health. And then second, come up with actually figure out what you need to accomplish that goal. Mm-hmm. Don't just start out blindly, which I think is really good advice, because as somebody who I spend most of my life in somewhat of the enthusiastic beginner phase, you know, and just assume everything's going to work out fine. It quickly doesn't. And then if you don't have a plan in place,
yes,
you just feel like a failure. So you scratch that one off and then you start a new thing.
Most New Year's resolutions, they say about 85% to 90% are given up by February, you know? I mean, it don't last very long.
I found a way around that. So in January, February, I'll get the membership at Choose Fitness or any other fitness place. I'll work out for January, February, but I don't give up because I keep the membership. I just stop working out. So that way I feel like I can make my resolution last a little longer.
By keeping your membership.
By keeping the membership going.
And looking at it periodically.
Some people deal with their spiritual health the same way. They're members in churches that they never attend.
So true. Or just, you know, keep checking in, but checking out in the head and heart, but right?
That's an interesting thing about, you know, suppose you pick spiritual as something you want to work at. It's not a one day a week deal. You know, you go to church and, well, that's taken care of. I think you got to find out ways to bring the Lord into your day-to-day life in a way that can make a difference. And that's one of the things I've found that's been so great as I've worked on my own spiritual is to feel I have a partner, you know. Mm-hmm. And so like on my health thing, you know, I'm, you know, first of all, thanking the Lord that he got me through this last, you know, physical illness area that I had. And I said, I need your help, you know, because I want to be strong so that I can maybe make a difference for you. I'm not just kind of getting healthy just to, so I can hang out and party and all. What can I do to continue to help you and what you're trying to accomplish?
I think too, in the spiritual department for sure, but I think it crosses the gamut. We tend to look at what works for other people and then think that that's what's going to work for us. You know, I remember distinctly feeling that about prayer or about going to church, right? Like, well, this is the one way that it's done, right? You are supposed to sit down and fold your hands and close your eyes when you pray. And if that doesn't work for me, instead of thinking, why don't I find a way that does work for me to talk to God? I think, why am I a failure? Why can't I do this thing? You know, the same would go for physical exercise. You look at, I have friends that run marathons, for goodness sakes, Jason Richards, if you're listening to this, like that man is crazy. He wakes up at 5 a.m. to go run. And if I judged my physical well-being against the way that Jason does it, that works for him, I would be a complete failure. Mm-hmm. Right.
Try joining him sometime like I did. I quickly realized that is not for me. That's a big feeling of failure when you're with people who have goals and specifics in a certain area that you are not gifted, and quickly realize their resolution does not fit, or their goals and their abilities does not fit my life. And you have to realize that your specifics, your steps, your dreams, your goals, have to fit who you are.
I can't run with Jason, but
right. I can drive his team.
Well, but that goes back to development levels, right? Because if you decided that you did want to run, Jason would be a great accountability partner, a great coach, for example, right? If you recognized and had a conversation ahead of time, like, look, I need your help. We got to start slow and pace ourselves, you know, but I need you to keep me accountable because I'm at a different developmental level than you. I think keeping that in mind is
helpful. You might decide,
so
for example, that by the end of next year that you could run a 10K comfortably, you know, which is what, you know, 5.6 miles or something like that, you know. Well, you could do that if you really set that as a goal and had a support person and, and all. But
you know what?
You know, you couldn't sort of say, well, I'm going to run a marathon at the end of the year, you know.
Or next month.
Yeah. Well, and that may be achievable, but you hit something there. There were two things that I heard from you at the beginning that I think are super powerful for all of us. One is that we always need others. Even Ken Blanchard, with all your success, all your books, and however many number of people you've spoken to at conferences, in every one of your steps in life, you are always so clear to admit your need for others. In situational leadership, you always need the director and the encourager and the supporter, no matter how good you're at with your task, right? So we always need others in that mix to be a part of us achieving our goals. And the other thing you just said, which I thought was so powerful, oftentimes with me, I'm a 7 in the Enneagram. I'm an enthusiast. I have huge dreams all the time, every day, that oftentimes don't translate into small, specific steps that are achievable.
So
I can go through a year with huge, big dreams, but without the small, specific, defined tasks, I might not reach that goal. And Ken, every time we ask you about some advice and wisdom, you're like, let me give you 3 points. Let me give you 5 of these things about exercise. Let me give you 3 of these steps about bettering your relationship with God. You're always good about specifying steps. And I think with our goals and our visions, if we specify small, achievable steps, we are more apt to get there. And I just talked with a friend this last week who... him and I were talking about moving the needle. It's actually David Manning who was shooting photos at our Uncommon Christmas. But David has this great idea of talking about dreams and visions for the year. And he was talking about oftentimes we have to just have a larger time frame for our goal. So instead of saying, I'm going to do this every day, say, I'm going to do this one thing this week. So it gives you a little more time, a little more doable, realistic time to reach our goals. And that was really good for me to hear.
That makes me think of John Acuff, who he wrote a book called Finish. I'm not sure if you've read any of his books before, Ken, but he talks about why we tend to fail. And one of the reasons is because our goals are too big. Mm-hmm. And they're unachievable. And so he said, whatever your goal is, like if it's weight loss, if it's exercise, take your initial goal and cut it in half. Because if we feel like failures, if we feel like we're not achieving or moving fast enough on the process, then we give up and we do nothing, right? And achieving half of our goal is way better than achieving none of it. And the second thing that he says that we undercut ourselves is because we're constantly moving the finish line. So just before we're about to accomplish a goal, we decide that that goal wasn't big enough. And so if our goal was to lose 10 pounds and we're at the 8-pound mark, we're like, yeah, but I really wanted to lose 15. And so instead of being able to celebrate some of these small, like, achievable goals, right, we constantly move the needle right before we got to celebrate an accomplishment. And so we get into this pattern because we make goals that are too big and because we never let ourselves actually achieve a smaller goal of feeling like failures. And then that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And we end up just walking away from the goal itself because we feel like we're never going to get there. Instead of setting small achievable goals and being able to turn and look back and say, this is how far I've come. Yes, I still have a ways to go, but look at where I was a month ago and now I'm here. And I achieved this smaller thing, which gives me encouragement and motivation and confidence to do the next thing.
Now, I'm such an includer, and this is why I'm looking over at Joe right now, because Joe thought he was just here to 20-minute walk with Ken Blanchard, right? And now he's thrown into a living room with a podcast and microphones, and we're like, Joe, you're in.
I see
Joe,
his come eyes take my lighting chair up over there.
And tell me what you're thinking, what questions you have, and go.
Well, first of all, in the Enneagram, we share that 7 times. So this is just me, a normal day, and I'm just excited to be here with all of you. And to be included means a lot. Now, I'm from South Louisiana, where we do gumbo. And if you don't know what gumbo is, it means you kind of have a roux at the bottom of the pot, and you got to stir it. And if you don't stir it, the famous gumbo won't taste as good. And so being with people like you, you stir me up inside, and I'm excited to be here. And just to share and talk a little bit about what I was hearing. So, Dawn, I loved what you said a moment ago. You said that the goals need to be very specific, and they need to be doable and not be so audacious. I actually moved out here. I have a wife and 6 kids, and people are always asking me, Joe, you must really love kids. And I'm like, no, I just really love my wife. Well, when you make a big risk and move from New Orleans, Louisiana, where everyone knows what gumbo is, to San Diego, where most people don't know what gumbo is, you're not in South Louisiana anymore,
right?
And so we wanted to start a church, and we found that we had a big goal. We had big aspirations. We had big intentions. But our goals weren't very, very specific. Mm-hmm. They weren't very reasonable. And Ken has taught through situational leadership the importance of SMART goals, specific, motivating, attainable, relevant, trackable. My biggest mistake with goals when we moved out here was I didn't write down SMART goals throughout the years. We spent all the money that we raised on equipment instead of investing in people's lives. Mm-hmm. And so I look back on that as, I don't count it a failure. I look at it as a grow opportunity. And specifically with dreams and talents and abilities that people have, I think about this book I recently read. Ken authored it with Chick-fil-A's Mark Miller.
Yeah.
And it's called Great Leaders Grow. And one thing I found with the grow model was you always have to gain knowledge through your mistakes and your setbacks. Mm. And I gained a lot of knowledge through what the world would call a failure.
Mm-hmm.
But I always want to do that and gain more knowledge from my goals and never shrink back. And so reaching out to others is exactly what you're doing in this podcast, listening in. To leaders like this and Ken and others, I think that's the greatest thing I could say with goals and writing them out is reach out to other people, because you'd be surprised how many more people you actually know through the relationships that are already in your life.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah.
Very cool. I think it's really cool that you shared about failure, because I think one of the reasons that people don't make goals is because they're afraid to fail. We have a culture that's failure averse, right? And so we try to play it safe. And there's benefits to playing it safe, but there's also a lot of missed opportunities sometimes. So the fact that you shared about a failure that has allowed you to grow into this next phase is pretty cool. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes. Actually, Ken, you're wonderful at celebrating failures, because I know that working with you for years, you are always one to encourage us in our failures. Right.
And well, you learn from them, you know,
right.
You don't die there and stop there. You sort of say, wow, that was really interesting. You know, how can I move forward from there? Because failures are opportunities. Gary Ridge, who's the president of WD-40, when he became president, he set a rule that there's no mistakes in WD-40. There are only learning opportunities, because what people do in organizations is that if they make a mistake, they try to cover it up so nobody else sees it, rather than so people come into Gary's office and say, boy, did we have a learning opportunity yesterday, which is, you know, a number of people screwed up. And his first question is, well, what did you learn from it, you know? And I think that's what you need to do with failure is there's no failures, there's only learning opportunities.
Right. Can you speak a little bit to, in the context of goals? How can we use failure maybe on the path to our goal to continue to propel us forward instead of making us feel defeated?
Well, what you need to recognize is that if you have a goal, you need to, as Joey said, make it sure it's smart. What am I specifically working on, you know? And then the T is it's trackable, so you want to be measuring it over time. And so the reason it's important to be measuring it over time so you can spot if there's movement mm-hmm. in the wrong direction early enough. A lot of times people will go along and then all of a sudden they say, my God, I'm failing and all, where if they had really been tracking it, you know, they would spot it earlier and then see what they can do to, you know, to reset the thing. And they also want to make sure in the SMART model, R stands for relevant. You want to make sure that the goals you set have real meaning mm-hmm. to you, not just sort of set some goal because you want to have a goal this year. That's why I like to look at it, whether it's, you know, intellectually, you know, physically, spiritually, or emotionally, you know, those are pretty important things. And so, and then the A stands for attainable. And attainable means is that you set a moderately difficult but achievable goal. I mean, a lot of the classic research on achievement motivation is they would give people a rings for ring toss and say, go and toss the rings any distance you want from the stake. And the people who are not high achievers, they would either go really close because they didn't want to make any mistakes, or they go way far away so people would say it was a really good try. But the high achievers would get a distance from the stake and they would start throwing the rings. And if they made most of them, they'd move farther away. If they missed, they'd move closer.
That's interesting.
Because they wanted to find out what was the distance that was moderately difficult but achievable.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to make sure that our goals aren't, you know, ridiculously difficult or stupidly easy. You want to kind of push yourself.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, too, I think, because what you're talking about is a constant relationship with our goals.
Mm-hmm.
How are we doing? Are we moving forward? Are we moving back? Are we not moving at all? But that constant relationship means that we have to be conscious of how we're doing each day with where we are and who we want to be. So how are ways that we can keep our goals kind of out in front of us on a daily basis? And I know, like, I see Joe here journaling, and I know you have a relationship mm-hmm. with journaling, and maybe that's the answer. What are ways that we can be tracking how we're doing each day and each week?
Well, I think it's two parts of what really helps. One is, how do you enter your day? And we have two selves. We have a task-oriented self and a thoughtful, reflective self. And most of us wake up our task-oriented self right away. We call it an alarm clock. I mean, why isn't, as John Ortberg say, it's the opportunity clock, or it's going to be a great day, alarm, you know? And you're jumping in, and you're trying to eat while you're getting dressed, you know, and you jump in your car. You're racing around with all these tasks. Rather than first wake up your thoughtful, reflective self and say, mm-hmm. okay, what's on my schedule today? You know, how do I want to be today? You know, what would I do to make at the end of the day I'd really feel good about this? Some chance to think. And also it's an opportunity to pray, you know. I'm always good at talking to God, but I'm working on listening to him too, you know, so to mm-hmm. say, here's what I got in mind. What do you have in mind? And, you know, quiet myself. A friend of mine said that if you're driving a car by yourself, don't turn the radio on. Just imagine that the good Lord is sitting next to you and talk to him and say thoughts and then shut your mouth and listen, you know?
Mm.
And that's how I ended up working with you all as an interim pastor. I was concerned about Bruce Humphreys leaving, and I was driving home one day and I had the Lord next to me and say, you know, how can I be helpful, you know, and all that. Then I quieted myself and all of a sudden this thought, why don't you become interim pastor? You know, who did that? Because a friend of mine said you can always tell when God's speaking to you because you think of something you never would have thought
That's
of
right.
yourself. I mean,
where
it wasn't something
I would
have thought of myself, mm-hmm. you know. I went, whoa, that's really interesting, you know. I don't know if anybody would be even interested in that, you know. And so you enter your day slowly, kind of think about it. What how do you want to do? And then what's really good, a friend of mine said, Blanchard, you've impacted me a lot of my life, but I just realized that you impacted me around accomplishing my goals, because I was always setting goals and then missing or whatever. And I realized that what I needed to do at the end of every day is in a journal, because I wasn't a good journal writer, is write praisings. What did I do today that I really feel good about that I kind of said I wanted to do? And then redirections. What did I do that I, you know, maybe ought to rethink? And if you do that every day, it's amazing how you start to realize what are the things you need to work on that you might even want to set a goal on. So it's both, you know, how do you enter your day and how do you, you know, end your day with your thoughtful, reflective self.
That's awesome.
And oftentimes, I just don't think we take inventory on on how we're doing and how we could be doing better and celebrating along the way. So, Ken, thank you so much. Now, I know time-wise, like we're at the end of our normal podcast time, but I have one more question, because oftentimes we think about our individual goals with career, with spirituality, with exercise in our body and our health. But I know we have a lot of families that listen to this. Oftentimes we don't think, or what are the goals we have with our family, and how do we even have a family goal? What does that look like? And I know you and your family have been just very intentional about that over the years.
Well, it's really interesting is that people take a lot of these concepts and they apply it at work, but they don't at home where, you know, you probably need it more than ever, you know. And so that what can you do to make a difference at home? My son Scott, who's going to become president of the company, he's a good speaker, and a lot of times he starts his speech off by saying people want to know what it would be like to be the 1 minute son, you know. And he said, well, when I was young I got in trouble a lot, which he did, and he said, I wish I was punished like my friends, you know, when I was young, sent to my room or even spanked, but no, I had to go down to the dinner table and talk to my mother and my father and my sister about how my behavior was inconsistent with family values, which, of course, we developed in an off-site retreat. But we really did set goals with our family, you know, with our kids around academics, around social interaction, around, you know, helping around the house and all those kind of things. But it's really good to what's your goal with your family. And so when our son and our daughter and Margie's brother decided they would come and join our company, Scott was the one who said, we need to get some outside help, you know, because we're going to have issues that we need to deal with and all. And so we formed a family council over 20 years ago, hired an outside consultant, and we meet as a family once a quarter for a whole day. And we've done it for over 20 years, and nobody's ever missed a meeting. And so we didn't want our family to goof up. We didn't want our business to goof up our families. And I've worked with a number of family businesses where everybody's angry and all that because they don't communicate. Peter Drucker told me years ago, nothing good happens by accident. Put some structure on it, you know. And so we put some structure on it if you want, you know, like date night is a fabulous concept. You know, people, oh, this is a great idea. Why not do it? Why not go out at least once every 2 weeks with your spouse for dinner? And the rule is you can't talk about work or the kids, or you have to talk about your relationship. Imagine if you talked about your relationship 26 times a year. Would your relationship improve? Would you get to know each other? So it's about intentionality. Mm-hmm. And your family is really important. So it's not going to get good just by accident. What can you do that you're trying to apply and learn for your work and business? How can you apply that at home for family goals and goals for individuals and all that kind of thing?
And I know we all want strong, supporting, loving families that launch each other into the life that God created us to live, right? We want to create that for our kids. But oftentimes we maybe don't know how or haven't heard how to put some structure on it or to put some intentionality into our family. So I know your family has developed a family mission statement and mm-hmm. individual values over the years.
Yes.
What does that look like for a family?
Well, it really is, you know, and Margie's been the one that's really pushed that, you know, and that, like, our family goal is to share and make magical memories together.
Oh.
You know, and because we told the kids we weren't going to leave them a lot of money, but we're going to try to help create magical memories. So, like, before Thanksgiving, we took everybody to New Orleans because the World War II Museum's down there, and they've asked us to develop a leadership training program with them. And we just wanted our kids and our grandkids to go there. It's five acres. It's chosen the number two museum in the world. And to realize that freedom is not free. You know, my dad was retired as an admiral in the Navy, and a lot of people take what we have in this country for granted and recognize that we had to fight to keep it. And so it's really taking things that you think about and putting some structure on it, you know. And so, like, one of our favorite concepts is one-on-ones, you know, for managers, where managers, we tell them they ought to meet individually with each of their direct reports for 15 to 30 minutes once every 2 weeks, and the manager sets the agenda and the direct report, the manager schedules a meeting, the direct report sets the agenda. And it's such a powerful thing if you met like that with your people once every 2 weeks with that. Imagine if you did that with each of your kids. Now, Joey would be pretty busy. He's got six kids. But
yeah.
Yeah. But it really is, you know, like you might say, well, he's got six kids. Well, every 2 weeks, you know, if he couldn't afford 3 hours for his kids, then why have kids? Why do that? I mean, so put some structure on it. So put it on date night. Put it on, you know, one-on-ones with your family and all. Is it, nothing good happens by accident. I love that.
Yes. And I remember, I think it was 7 years ago, maybe 8 years ago now, that you came out with Lead Your Family Like Jesus. Mm-hmm. I remember I got to be in this very living room behind a camera right over there watching you guys film interviews about leading your family like Jesus and talking about a family mission statement and mm-hmm. values. We'll put a link in this podcast where families can read that and look into having intentional goals and structure with their families, because no matter where someone is at with Jesus in their faith, there's no doubting his impact on the world and history. And when you applied those values and those ways of life to a family, it was so powerful for me and so many of the people that were involved in Lead Your Family Like Jesus. So we'll create mm-hmm. a link there for that.
And Jesus was a classic example of having a clear sense of vision and direction for his people. What business were they in? Come with me, I'll make you fishers of men. You know, what was the picture of the future if they did a good job? You will make disciples of all nations and baptize them in the name of the Father and Son. And what are the values? Love God with all your heart and all your mind and soul, and love thy neighbor as thyself. You know, that kind of covers mm-hmm. it. He said, you know, 10 commandments are good, but let's focus on what's really important. And you look at those, they really cover most all of that, you know, because, you know, if you really love, you know, God and love your neighbor as thyself, you know, you wouldn't think about divorce. You wouldn't think about jealousy and all those other things, you know.
It would change the way you live, for yeah. sure. And the way you enter a whole new year. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for this time. And Joe, thanks so much for jumping in and letting us throw you on the microphone.
I'm just stoked over here, petting Joy and listening to this awesome conversation. Oh, it's so good to be with you all. And I hope that everybody listening just has something to take away, that they can apply this to setting goals for themselves for the coming year or setting goals for their family and truly being intentional. Because as you said, Ken, nothing good happens on accident. So
friends, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. And we pray that you are sparked to help bridge the gap between who you want to be and who you are now, and that this is helpful. And we'll put a bunch of links in here. But thanks for listening. God bless.
Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year.
God bless, too, and have a great year.
Thanks, Ken. Woo!